Before we begin, let's cultivate our motivation and have an attitude of kindness towards other living beings, remembering that we all equally want happiness and not suffering, and remembering also that we are dependent on other living beings simply to stay alive. And so with that kind of awareness, then let's use our precious opportunity to learn and practice the Buddha's teachings so that we can benefit all these living beings. So with an attitude of love and compassion, care and concern, let's listen and learn today so that we can make the world a better place and make ourselves better people in it. Okay. So we've been going through "Don't Believe Everything You Think" now for a number of weeks. It's a Tibetan poem written several centuries ago about how to practice the Buddha's teachings. So in 37 verses, he put it all very succinctly. And we've been going through one verse a month, so it's taking some time. The previous verses and talks are all on the internet, so you can watch them there if you'd like. But today we're going to be starting out with verse number 15, which is about working with criticism. Okay. So it's going to talk about the practice of bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas are beings with love and compassion and an altruistic intention towards all others. Who want to attain full spiritual awakening for the benefit of others. So this is how they practice. Yeah, so the author of the poem says, "Though someone may deride and speak bad words about you in a public gathering..." Let me stop with those two lines. How do you usually react when somebody derides and speaks bad words about you in a public gathering? Yeah, you're at a party, maybe even a wedding. Family things are really good, you know? You're at a wedding, or Thanksgiving dinner, or some social party, you know, at work, and somebody comes and derides you and speaks bad words about you so that other people hear. Okay. There's a couple of seats up here in the front. Yeah. So how do we usually react when that happens?
Angrily.
Angrily. And we freak out. It's like
we defend ourselves.
Yes, definitely defend ourselves. Yeah, our mind is not at all peaceful. We're furious. We're humiliated. Yeah, we are up in arms and ready to deride and speak bad words about the other person. Okay? It sounds like our Congress, doesn't it? Maybe that's all they do, you know? They got elected to deride and speak bad words about each other, because they do more of that than anything else that seems these days, doesn't it? Yeah? Anyway, let me get back here to verse. But it pertains to Congress too. I mean, if you're, it's a public setting and somebody can speak bad words about you and deride you. Okay, so, you know, that kind of setting, we want to defend ourselves, we want to set the record straight, we want to put the other person down so that nobody believes them. So what are we being advised to do by Tomen Sampo, the Bodhisattva who wrote this book? Look at that person as your spiritual teacher and bow to him or her with respect. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. Look at that person as a spiritual teacher. Are you kidding? They are anything but that. And bow to them with respect. Pay homage to that jerk who is so rude and inconsiderate to criticize me in front of a group of people. Never will I do that. You know? And so, because we don't do that, then we really stay very stuck in our anger, don't we? You know, you go home from the party, you go home from the family meal, the wedding, whatever it is, you can't think of how nice it was that everybody was together, or, you know, what a good time people had having an office party, or the, you know, the occasion you were celebrating. You can't think of anything like that. All you think about is this person criticized me in front of a bunch of other people. You know, and that's what you think about that day, what you dream about that night, what you wake up thinking about the next morning, and what you meditate on for the next 5 weeks. And then, you know, gradually your animosity becomes ill will and malice, and you start planning how to get even. Yeah. At the next family gathering, at the next office party, just wait. You know, and I'm going to really show that person who's in charge here. Okay? So we remain totally stuck in our anger, don't we? We're totally immobilized, stuck in our anger, can't move, unhappy and miserable. Right? Mm-hmm. And we don't want to give it up, because we're afraid if we do, then that other person's going to be walking all over us. Yeah, we let them walk all over us saying that kind of stuff without defending ourselves. I can't do that. Yeah. So we choose misery over happiness for the sake of our honor. Okay? Is that stupid or what? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And then, of course, you know, at the next gathering, when we humiliate the other person, we may say, oh, now I got him good. But how do we look in the eyes of other people who saw us ridicule or make fun of or put somebody else down? Is that going to win the respect of other people? Not at all. They're going to look at us and go, that guy has a big mouth. I better not get to know them very well, because they're going to turn their big mouth on me. Yeah? And we do all of that and experience that result for the sake of our honor, which is actually quite dishonorable, at least in my eyes. Okay? So what Tomei Zampo is saying, you know, look on that person as a spiritual teacher and bow to him or her with respect. Okay, so how are you going to see them as a spiritual teacher? Because our spiritual teacher is the one who teaches us the Dharma, who teaches us how to transform our mind. What is this person teaching me? Well, they're actually teaching us how to transform our mind, because they're giving us the opportunity to do it. And So in that way, they really are our spiritual teacher. What they're doing is they're pointing out to us, tapping us on the shoulder and saying, hey, you know, you're kind of attached to your reputation. Take a look at this. Yeah. And we like to think of ourselves as not attached to our reputation. But if we weren't attached to our reputation, why are we so mad and upset? Okay, so they're showing us, they're teaching us, oh yeah, I got to acknowledge I am attached to my reputation. And look what the outcome of being attached to my reputation is. Misery. Yeah, misery. There was one time, some of you have heard this story before, sorry. But it's a good example. I was asked to give a talk on one of the books I wrote at Elliott Bay Bookstore in Seattle. Weren't you there? Yeah? So I was giving this talk. I forget which book it was on. Do you remember this lady raised her hand? Yeah. Oh, it was Working with Anger, was it? Okay. This lady raised her hand, you know, when it was time for questions and comments. And she stands up and she said, what you said about Buddhism is wrong. Yeah. My teacher says, da 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 da, which is the opposite of what you said, and you just don't understand the Buddhist teachings very well. You know, and she went on for about 5 minutes. You know? Yeah? It's great. So she's going on, tearing me to bits. And then I said, you know, when she stopped, I said, thank you very much for your comment. And then I went on with what I was saying. Yeah, and that was it. And afterwards, you know, I had to sign books, you know. They wanted me to do that. So a few other people in the audience came up and they said, we can't believe you did that. You know, that you just stood there and took it and said thank you afterwards. But I thought, what else was I going to do? You know? Yeah, especially if you're doing a book reading on working with anger. What page is this? I can't just write now. But really, in thinking about it, you know, what else could I do? I mean, defending myself was totally irrelevant. Yeah? I mean, people in the audience, they can make up their own mind whether or not I knew what I was talking about. You know? So I don't need to defend myself. They can think for themselves and decide. So I just let it be. Yeah? And that was the end of it. And I got a real good story out of it. Okay. But, it, you know, for me, the fact that I could do that really indicated progress. Because I'm usually quite sensitive to criticism. And years before, you know, during my time when I was working in the Italian Dharma Center with the macho Italian men. And, yeah, and I remember being in meetings, you know, we would have committee meetings, and they would tear me to shreds, and I would just, like, be like this, I'm not going to cry, I'm not going to cry, I'm not going to cry, you know. And then one day I just thought, okay, I'm going to cry. This is how I started crying in the middle of the meeting. You know, so looking back on that, whether you cry or whether you don't cry, doesn't matter. I was miserable either way. Yeah? Yeah? totally miserable. And what I've learned, you know, since then, which enabled me to, you know, be calmer at Elliott Bay Bookstore, was, you know, when people do that, then sometimes it's very nice. You just join in with doing it. And you make fun of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you make it into a joke. Mm-hmm. Yeah? The Karmapa, actually, in his book, I forget the title of it, it came out a couple of years ago. He was saying that sometimes he had a tutor, the present Karmapa, who's young, he had a tutor who would come in and scold him for not doing his studies properly, you know. And he said sometimes he would just kind of mentally join in and say, oh yeah, that monk, he really is lazy. He didn't prepare his lessons. You know, kind of go along mentally inside with his tutor. You know, and by doing that, he was able to keep his calm on the outside. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember another time when my mother got furious at me over some small thing, you know. I didn't do something the way she wanted me to do it. And, you know, and she was really, you know, it was a phone call and, you know, I was holding the phone here. And then I just said, well, Mom, you know what to do. You have a really dumb daughter. It's really too bad for you. You know? I mean, I just kind of joined in and said, you know, what do you do when you know, you have a daughter who can't think about these things and do them the right way? It's really unfortunate, isn't it? And that stopped it. You know? That stopped it. So, you know, whereas, you know, when we get upset because our ego gets piqued, then, you know, it actually drags the thing on and on and on, and we become more and more unhappy. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to read you one of the stories from here. Well, maybe, I mean, it's my story, so maybe I should just tell you out loud rather than read it. Yeah, another illustration of doing this. So, it was back in the 80s. I was at a conference, a Buddhist conference in Taiwan. It was a huge Buddhist conference. They had like hundreds of people there. And at the very end of it, the master who had organized it, you know, he had taken everybody on a little mini tour of some of his centers, and we had had a big lunch, and then it came time, you know, it was the last session, so he was going to say goodbye. And so it was also the time for him to thank the other people who had been involved in organizing it. So he had some of his senior disciples come up to the front of the room, and he's saying, this nun, you know, took charge of this and this and this and this and did a very excellent job, and everybody applauds, and this monk did this and this and this and did a wonderful job, and I know you're all grateful, applause, applause, applause. And then he comes to one other monk and he says, but that one, I asked him to do something and he slacked off, and it was a real mess because he didn't do his job very well. Yeah. You imagine getting criticized by your spiritual mentor in front of a huge room full of people. And that monk stood there, you know, and he just listened. He didn't react in any way. Yeah. And then I thought, oh, that's the monk, that's the close disciple. Yeah, that's the monk that the master really trusts. Because he could, you know, say that to that monk in public and, you know that that monk could keep his cool and could learn from the situation. Yeah, it made a really big impact on me. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that is a good practitioner. Yeah, so, you know, in many situations like that, if we're able just to keep our cool,
yeah,
we actually are showing that what the other person is saying is wrong by our very demeanor. Yeah. When we get ego challenged and defensive and angry, we're kind of showing that, yes, this person is a difficult person to work with. Look how they respond to things. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we usually think, oh, you know, person who defends themselves, that's the person who is strong and powerful. But very often what they do is they just keep the conflict going and make things degenerate even more and more. Now, I work with guys in prison, and when I talk like this, they look at me and they say, you don't know our world. You know, in our world, you have to stand up for yourself. Otherwise, they're going to keep on doing what they're doing. And you're going to, you know, you'll either wound up getting in a fight right then and there, or you're going to get jumped sometime later. Yeah. So you've got to stand up and challenge the guy and tell him to cut it out right there, even though you're going to go to the hole afterwards. The hole is like solitary, yeah, administrative sec, at sec. You go there, you know, with a bloody nose and a black eye and who knows what, and you know when you come out that you're going to have to deal with that guy again with all of his friends this time, but you're willing to do that to show them who's boss. Okay. And I said, really? You know, I mean, I challenge these things. Really? That's the only possible way you can act in that situation? Is really stand up and challenge the guy and have him back down? Otherwise you're going to be seen as weak? Yeah, really? What about just inviting that person in? Yeah. What about, you know, because my thought is when we're afraid, yeah, somebody challenges us and we're afraid, that guy is feeding on our fear. Yeah. If we are cool inside and just say, in a very gracious way, not in a fearful way, but a gracious way. You want that? Please. Yeah. Then, in being centered yourself, yeah, there's a strength that comes through because you're not afraid and that guy can't, the other person can't feed on your fear. Okay? We had, we knew one guy when he was in prison. The Buddhists would meet in one small room, and sometimes some of the guys from the other, well, one time actually, some of the guys from one of the other groups was outside, and, you know, they have windows inside. The windows only see into another room, not outside, but, you know, so that everybody, the guards can look in and everything. But one of the guys from another religion came and started tapping on the window and tapping on the window while these guys were, you know, trying to meditate or have their discussion or whatever they were doing, tapping on the window, you know, deliberately provoking, you know, and trying to disturb them. So the one guy we know kind of got up and he opened the door and he said, would you like to come in and sit with us? Yeah? And the other guy just said, oh, no, and disappeared. Yeah? But I thought, you know, that was real smart. Yeah? The guy is pretending like he, you know, I mean, he's doing something deliberately to provoke you, but you take it on first face value. You want to come in? You're tapping it, you know, all around. Want to come in? Please come in and join us. Yeah? Stopped it. Okay? So this kind of way of handling situations depends on having a mind that can let go. Having a mind that isn't so ego-sensitive. Okay. So what is it that makes us ego-sensitive when we are derided or criticized in public, or even in private, for that matter? In looking inside, there's a few things that I think really are the source of when I get angry about this. One is part of my mind is afraid that maybe what they're saying is true. You know? They call me a name, they point out a bad quality, and I instantly go, you know, maybe what they're saying is true. Ugh, that can't be true. I don't want that to be true about me. So I get furious, you know, and attack back. Or another thing that can make me defensive in there is what are other people going to think about me? You know, maybe nobody's going to like me. So I've got to show that what they said was wrong because I want people to like me. Mm-hmm. So, do you have any other reasons? What are other reasons why you might get ego challenged in that situation when you look inside? Other things? Yeah?
Want to protect myself.
Yeah, we want to protect ourselves because the other person may not like us, or the other person, you know, I mean, they can damage us in some way. Yeah, they can ruin our reputation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my reputation is so important. Okay, so how do you deal with that kind of thing? Well, okay, if we take the first one of maybe I'm afraid that maybe what they said is true, and I don't want to acknowledge that I did that thing or that I have that fault, then how do I work with that mind inside myself? Okay, how do I let go of that? It's by looking and saying, well, you know, I have these little talks with myself, you see. Well, children, you're always saying that you want to become a better person. Yeah, that you want to overcome your faults. Here is somebody who's pointing out one of your faults. They are helping you to do what you always say you want to do, by pointing out to you something that you're oblivious of. Okay? So you don't have to be afraid of, you know, if it's true or not true, you know, because in this particular situation, I've looked inside and I can see, yeah, what they're saying is true. So why do I need to get angry about it and defend myself? It's true. Yeah, I have that fault. Yeah. And can you imagine, you know, at work, somebody, you know, your boss trounces you, you know, and I'm not saying you go, oh, yeah, I did that, I'm sorry. But you look, you know, and you have your own sense of dignity, and you say, you know, you're right, I did do that. I need to work on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you say it in that way, it ends, doesn't it? Yeah, and it ends inside you too, because you're not angry, because you really see, yeah, that person is sharing some valuable information with me, even if they're saying it a little bit too loudly, you know, thinking that I don't have my hearing aid in today. You know, even if they're doing it that way, that doesn't matter. Still, I can learn from it, and I can say, yeah, you're right. Okay. If what the other person says isn't true, Again, I don't have to defend myself and get worried about my reputation. Because what they say isn't true. And if I give them some accurate information, or if I show them through my behavior in that very moment what's in my heart, you know, then they'll see that what they said isn't true. And even if everybody else heard it, yeah, like they did in Elliott Bay Bookstore, so what? Yeah. Like, are all those people, when I gave that talk at Elliott Bay, are all of them going to go home at night and, you know, after that lady criticized me and say, we, you know, call up their friends the next day and say, we went to this book reading at Elliott Bay Bookstore by somebody who was totally incompetent. They're going to call up all their friends and say that, and that's all they're going to think about the next week. Was I went to this book reading by somebody who was incompetent. Yeah? Really? That's all they're going to think about for the next week? Yeah? Am I really that important? That's all they're going to think about for the next week is how incompetent this speaker was? I don't think so. And anyway, what's a reputation? It's other people's thoughts. What are other people's thoughts? Yeah. Can you even touch a thought? You know, a thought is some kind of blip of energy going through. We have all sorts of thoughts, you know. I don't think that person is really going to focus on that bad thought about me forever. And then the next time I meet them, they're gonna go, oh, you were the one who's totally incompetent. I went to your book reading. So it is possible to practice like this. Let me read you a couple of other stories, because in this book, I put a lot of true stories that other people told me about this kind of thing. Okay. So here's one by a young man who came to the Abbey maybe like a year or two out of high school. And he said, I played basketball in high school, and my coach would get so angry, sometimes randomly, at strange things. One day he was screaming at me in my face, and I thought, what if he's the Buddha? You know, see this person as your spiritual teacher? See this person as the Buddha? He was still yelling in my face, but my mind was saying, whoa, this changes everything. Yeah. Almost instantly, there was space in my mind, and my mind relaxed. All the fear went away for a while. In that moment, it was quite powerful because I realized I really didn't know who my coach was, and maybe he was the Buddha. Okay. Here's another one by a friend of mine who lives in the UK. So he said, for many years, I've had problems with a colleague at work. Sound familiar? The relationship was extremely difficult for me. In my perception, he was very aggressive, critical, and negative towards me. His disparaging comments caused me to doubt myself in an unhealthy way. Remember, I said, we were afraid, what if what he says is true? Okay, so this is happening here. But his comments caused me to doubt myself in an unhealthy way, and my self-confidence slid away and was replaced by tension and stress. As much as I possibly tried as much as I possibly could to react with compassion, understanding, to love him. But as you can imagine, I did not always succeed. The other day, following an episode in which he was aggressively critical towards me in a team meeting, he came to apologize. He was very sincere when he did so, and said that he greatly appreciated my patience and saw this as one of my great qualities. I was pleased that my quote-unquote enemy described me as a patient person. And then, although I knew that often my quote-unquote patience takes the form of just saying nothing while boiling with anger underneath, sometimes it is like actual fortitude. You know? I thought the fact that he recognized this was a good sign, and he linked it to me being a Buddhist, which of course it is. I felt that I was for once giving a good example of how Buddhists behave. Our relationship has been better since then, and while I don't think that I'm right and he's wrong, it was interesting to see that if we just wait and be patient, or at least quiet, with people who are so obviously disturbed by anger and critical minds, eventually they themselves will realize that they are not acting constructively. Our being as patient as possible gives them the space to understand that. So after much confusion and pain between us, this was a nice moment for me, and also for him, I believe. I still have a long way to go before I am able to consistently relate to this colleague in a proper way. I'm pleased that I managed to try as much as possible to develop patience and compassion for him. And I do see how much he suffers from being in so much conflict with the world. Nonetheless, I still get angry with him and sometimes am so exhausted by the negativities, his and mine, that I just want to be very far away from him. However, since that will not happen anytime soon, I am committed to keep on cultivating fortitude and compassion. Good, huh? Okay. So that's the verse on transforming criticism. We have a little time for questions and maybe answers. Yeah.
You know, in our public schools, especially with the, maybe the middle school the most, but all the grades, we have this problem of bullying. And what would you say to the kids that are the victims? I know a lot of times they may turn up angry and try to kill somebody, or they try to go anger within and they commit suicide. Mm-hmm. What could you say to them?
Okay, so what would I say to kids who are being bullied?
Yes.
Okay, well, it depends what age child it was. But even, I would say, middle school and high school, you know, if you can say to the child, you know, you have your own dignity inside, don't you? Yeah. You know inside of yourself that you're an okay person. You know inside of yourself that you have good qualities. Yeah. You stay focused on your own self-confidence. Because only you know the reality, you know, of what's going on inside of yourself. Other people do not know what you're thinking. They don't understand what you're doing. So somebody else can say this, somebody else can say that. You don't have to react to it. You can just stand there, you know, and show them your own dignity. Not your arrogance, but your dignity. Yeah. And you don't need to get mad at what they're saying, because it has nothing to do with reality. And I think some kids could understand that. And similarly, I think a sense of humor could go a long way, you know, if you're getting bullied or made fun of or whatever, you know. If you jump in and you start clowning around about whatever it is they're saying, yeah, then all the other people can do is laugh. Because you see, they want you to be afraid of them. And when you say, I refuse to be afraid, because there's nothing to be afraid of, then the other person, you know, they don't know what to do. They have to stop.
Because you're taking away their power. Like, it's like you take away their power and they just go, oh, fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas when you're afraid and you react in fear, whether you do what they say or whether you fight back, either way, they feel powerful because they were able to make you afraid of them. Yeah. Whereas here, you are saying, no, I'm not going to be afraid. Yeah. And then you can often look at these people and see the amount of pain that they're in inside, you know. I mean, a person who finds it uplifting to make other people afraid of them is not a person who's happy. Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Comments? Yeah.
I'm not sure how to ask this, but you've talked a lot about you know, how situations happen and then how we respond and how our feelings, whether we're angry or embarrassed or hurt or curious, you know, why this is happening. Could you talk a little bit about what happens after? Because it's so hard sometimes to let go. Pema Chodron says, don't get hooked. Well, right. Yeah. I mean, by the time I remember that I'm not supposed to be hooked, it's too late.
You're well hooked.
And how do you get rid of the feelings? Are just are so strong and they're so powerful inside. How do you get rid of them?
Yeah.
So that you can go on with your life.
Yeah. This is where it really it takes some time on the cushion. Okay? Because it means that, you know, you see that you're upset, you look which verse pertains to what I'm doing, and then you meditate on that verse, and you try to look at that situation through the viewpoint of what that verse is saying. Yeah. And sometimes you really have to struggle with it because you're so tight inside that, I mean, it could take a whole meditation session to start to release the anger a little bit. But you continue on and you do that. And then even if, I mean, because this is the only way I know, this is what I did, you know, and even if I got mad the next meditation session, you know, then I went back and I practiced, you know, there's different techniques for dealing with anger. So I would like practice different ones and try and get familiar with different ones. Yeah? And it was only through, you know, repeated practice that then sometimes our habitual way of looking at something starts to change. Because the feelings are so strong because we're telling ourselves a story. Yeah? You know, without the story, the feelings aren't going to be there. But we're telling ourselves a story. That person is da 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 da, and they did this to, you know, this, and it meant da 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 da, and to me, who I am, blah blah blah. And, you know, there's a whole story. You know, my whole life people have treated me like da 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 da, and, you know, why is this happening to me again? It's not fair, da da da. And I love this person so much, and how can they betray my trust, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's a whole, there's story upon story going on in our head. Yeah? And we have to challenge those stories and say, is that story true or not? Yeah? Is it true? And if we really look closely, we'll see that the stories we tell ourselves that get angry, that make us get angry, are not true. Yeah? They aren't true. Yeah? Even if it's something like, oh, you know, I trusted you so much and you betrayed my trust, you know? And even if you've asked that person, you know, did you do this deliberately? Then you still can ask yourself, okay, maybe it's somebody I trusted and they deliberately hurt my feelings. Why do I need to get angry? Why do I need to get angry? Why? Yeah. It's my anger is a knee-jerk reaction. You know, because I'm trying to protect myself and defend myself, and this ego is feeling threatened. And to say, who do I have to protect myself against? Who do I have to defend myself against? You know, really. And then if you think about karma and you think, you know, why is this person doing this? Well, because I did the same thing, similar kinds of things like this to other people, either in this life or in previous lives. I did it to other people, it's coming around to me, why am I complaining? If I don't like this, I've got to stop doing it.
You know, that's one of the only things that sometimes calms my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I meditate with a clear mind, and there's nothing, you know, emptiness in mind. If I try to meditate on a problem, whatever it is, my mind just goes nuts.
Yeah, you don't meditate on the problem, you meditate on the antidote to the problem. Okay? The reason your mind is going nuts is because you're meditating on the problem, not on the antidote.
Meditating on the problem is called ruminating.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got to stay on the antidote to the problem. Antidote. And, you know, one thing I've discovered is, you know, when we get all upset about this, it's like, why did they do this? Why did they do this? How is understanding why they did that going to help me with my anger? It really doesn't matter why they did it. The point is, whatever made them do it, it was because they were unhappy. It really doesn't matter exactly why they did it. And I don't have to give them a psychological diagnosis. Oh, they did it because, what, you know, what's the new one? Narcissistic disorder. That's the new one. Did I say it right?
Yeah. Narcissistic personality.
Oh, narcissistic personality disorder. That's the new one, you know. And or, the, you know, oh, they did it because they're bipolar, you know. I mean, we don't need to diagnose everybody.
I think in your earlier talks, I think it was you that said, if somebody is telling, if when you get angry at somebody and there's a portion of truth, it's like them saying you have a nose on your face.
Yeah.
And if it's not true, it's like them saying there was a horn on your head, which is not true, so why should you be angry at
that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, either way, there's nothing to be mad at. Yeah. So our little, you know, puzzle to ask ourselves is, why do I need to get mad?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I struggle with when people are not treating me so kindly is I kind of have this sense of, like, I deserve better. Like, people shouldn't be treating me like that. I'm kind of, how do I, like, get away from that, that ego of, like, I deserve to be treated better.
Sort of. Okay. Well, the world should know who I am. And they should know that definitely I am the best thing in it. And why, you know, this world is so stupid. I'm not cooperating because I am entitled to be treated better just by virtue of who I am. So I make fun of my ego in that way.
Yeah. It's really silly, but...
Yeah. It's like I just make fun of myself. Yeah. Oh, really, children? There's a rule in the universe that everybody has to treat you well? Yeah, when did they pass that rule of the universe? Yeah? So I find, you know, humor with myself to be very helpful. And I also sometimes, when I feel people aren't treating me well enough, then I say, actually, it's very good. Because if I have a mind that thinks I have a certain status and should be treated a certain way, then I am subject to arrogance and conceit. Arrogance and conceit are not a quality I want to develop. Yeah? So if somebody is putting me down, there, you know, that's good. Yeah, they aren't playing along with my trip, and I have to drop my arrogance and conceit, and that's actually quite good for me.
Yeah. How about when you criticize yourself? We are talking about, you know, other people that can criticize us.
Yeah.
But when, you know, we all, you know, me and you're not perfect, we all know that.
Yeah.
And then I'm just saying, you know, I want to ask you, like, you know, if you have that, you know, experience, then how, like, you know, you manage your own criticism.
Okay. I think the self-criticism is, we get stuck, is put it this way, self-criticism is one of our biggest hindrances, I think. You know, putting ourselves down. And we do it sometimes very automatically. And we don't even realize we're doing it because we're not aware of what we're thinking. But if we stop and become aware of what we're thinking, sometimes we find this incredible tirade going on. You're so stupid. How could you do this? No wonder nobody trusts you. No wonder nobody cares about you. You're not going to amount to anything. You know, and you find those kind of thoughts going on in our own mind, don't we? Yeah, I mean, we all have this. And so the idea there is to catch it and to say, I'm putting myself down. And that is not productive, number one. Number two, what I'm saying to myself about myself, is it true? You can't do anything right, children. You're totally incapable. Is that true? I can't do anything right? I'm totally incapable? That's not true. There are some things I can do okay on. You know, I can make a cup of tea. Yeah, you start with the small things. You know. Yeah, okay, I'm not a rocket scientist, but, you know, I can do this, and I'm not totally incapable. So this mind that is going around putting myself down is wrong. Yeah. The thought that says, nobody loves me, or I'm unlovable. Is that true? Nobody loves me? Yeah. Maitri, our kitty, loves me. You know? I remember when I was a kid, my best friend was our German Shepherd dog because he always loved me no matter what happened. Yeah, somebody loves me. Yeah, I'm not totally unlovable. And if I look, there are some human beings that actually care about me too if I open my eyes.
When you were saying that, I was thinking, not exactly the opposite, but I was thinking about how sometimes I can be so highly critical. I mean, I'll be in a grocery store and I'll look at someone's got in their cart and, you know, oh my God, what's wrong with those people? Don't they read? You know, I mean, I'm all kind of criticizing them, but it seems like sometimes the way I can catch myself when I'm doing that. It's a terrible thing. I hate that I do that. Mm-hmm. But often, you know, I have to say to myself, well, when's the last time you ate something you knew you shouldn't eat? Or is it possible that everything you do is always very wise? Of course not. Why are you judging this person?
Yeah.
You know, shut up.
Right.
It sort of sounds like what you're saying is don't do the global thing. I'm awful. I never get anything right.
Uh-huh.
But it seems kind of helpful to keep in mind that, you know, I'm not really so great at stuff. And probably the things I notice other people doing are the things I do.
Yeah.
That's why I keep secret.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, they're just like me.
that would be healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It depends, because sometimes when we're putting, you're talking about putting other people down.
Mentally saying that person's whatever.
Yeah, and I was talking about the situation where you're putting yourself down.
Okay.
So it's slightly different. No, one is the object I'm putting down is myself.
Okay.
Saying, I'm unlovable. I can't do anything right. And what you're talking about is saying, that person is stupid. They can't do anything right. So it's the object is different.
Okay.
So that does make a difference. Because I think when we see that we're criticizing other people for something, then it's very helpful to see, oh, I do the same thing, you know. And it's not such a big deal. Pema Chodron tells this great story about leading a retreat. And at the retreat center where she was, you know, everybody had to bust their own dishes and take them in and wash them. And she was sitting somewhere, and, you know, it caught her eye that there was, you know, a dish and a bowl and a spoon sitting over there. And, you know, she's going, look, we had announced it, you know, everybody should bust their own dishes. And some idiot left their dish there, wanting everybody to go pick it up. And, you know. And because people had their own dishes there, she thought, I'm going to go over and look and see whose dish it was. She lifted it up and it said, Pema Chodron. And she went, oh, it was my dish. So this is exactly what you're talking about. You know, it's like, oh, I do it too. Why am I so down on other people? Yeah. Okay. So let's dedicate. There's some verses, page 30, right? If you they're in the blue. If you have, if you don't, then just hum along. Due to this error, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore.